cliffcentral.com.
I am a South African. I carry the hopes and dreams of my country and the generations to come. I know that it's not where I come from, but where I'm going to that really matters.
At Sibanye, we believe the future of our country will be defined by our actions today, which is why we are committed to the development of our leaders. Sibanye, we are one. Visit us on sibanyegold.co.za.
All right, Lorraine. Lorraine, going to do our book review. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
That's good. Thank you for making the effort and going through some books. Tell us about this one you've got.
This one is called Leadership in a Week. It's actually not a book. It's a 7-day leadership program packaged in a book. But when you go through it, it's actually exercises, things that you do on a daily basis, arranged from Monday to Saturday, a 7-day program of things you do. In a leadership training type of a thing. So that's why I say it's just a program packaged in a book, but not really a book. Okay. It's written by Dr. Carol O'Connor. She's been teaching leadership for 30 years now, and she believes that anyone can be a leader as long as if there is willingness to step up and take responsibility on any particular day.
Okay.
I picked the book because I didn't have time for big books and it looked small, and it actually says that you can do it in one sitting, which I did, okay. Or you can do it actually over 7 days as it's prescribed here. So the central theme for the book is that leadership can be learned, and the important thing in leadership to learn is self-awareness. So in the first day, on Monday, what you go through is lessons and exercises around self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And then on a Tuesday, it is about understanding people. So the exercise about how you communicate and understand people.
It's going to the rock, finding yourself, that self-awareness. Everyone seems to start there. Leadership programs you do, you always start with this first module that says, who am I?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the science is about getting better at that.
Yeah, definitely. And then for Tuesday, she recommends communication. Wednesday, the ability to deal with authority and power, because this is something that really derails a lot of leaders. Power. So she talks about how not to get, you know, over yourself and how to stay humble and all that. On a Thursday is about making decisions. What is your decision making model? How do you arrive at decisions, right? And then Friday, she says connecting and linking with people. And then finally on a Saturday is about vision and inspiration. I must read to you her definition of leadership.
Okay.
She says leadership is the ability to present a vision so that others want to achieve it. Leaders need the skill to work with other people, as well as the belief that they can make a difference. Okay. So that's her definition. I don't know what you make of it. But he said that leaders need followers. Okay. And when leaders represent their followers fairly and followers loyally support their leaders, they create a vicious cycle. And also, if leaders later fail to respect their followers, then this cycle breaks. And the follower withdraw their support, or the followers withdraw their support. I think we've seen many examples of that happening, that if a leader is not representing you fairly, to the extent that is possible in this country, you can then withdraw your support. So I really think that it's a practical book. I liked it for anybody, actually. And the question she wants everybody who's in a leadership to ask themselves to test your leadership ability is, would I follow a leader like myself? And I think that's fundamental. If you think you are a good leader, then the question is that, can I follow myself? If not, then you are doing something wrong. But it's very practical. I recommend this book, and I would give it a 4 out of 5. It's just too good to be true.
the trick about 7 days?
Yes, the trick about 7 days. Yeah.
What's the idea that you keep going through this over and over and over again? Or,
you know, yes, over and over, over the weeks, and eventually it becomes a habit and you learn all these things and it becomes like your natural way of leading. That's the idea. I just want to comment on the last question you asked your panel. How do you keep, you know, yourself? What was the question? How do you keep? Yeah. So
how do you stay true to that, the sanctity of that title, that position that you hold?
Yeah. For me, I think I agree with Professor Mamokgethi that keeping your feet on the ground is the way to go. But more importantly, how do you do that? You have to have people around you that will keep you honest. And it's people that you trust, people that you listen to, and you know that you trust them and you have no doubt about their sincerity and everything. And I think those are the people that can, whether it's your family or anybody that you should, but you need that. Without that, you will be swallowed. That's my opinion.
Okay. And are you working on a next book?
Not yet. I haven't worked on my book as yet. I'm not sure what I'm going to, which book I'm going to review. I saw a book yesterday by somebody, Swanepoel, and I think that's the book I will look at. I forgot what the title is, but it's a South African author, and it looks very interesting.
Could it be Bernard Swanepoel? I want to form.
No, it's a lady. It's a lady. Yeah,
Tracy.
maybe Tracy.
Okay.
In this book, something that I forgot to mention is that when they talk about communication, funny enough, they embrace the use of technology. Your blogs, your Facebook, your whatever, which other books don't do. So it was very refreshing to see that those things have been incorporated in this book.
Thank you so much, Lorraine. Really appreciate it. That's a book that you can go and get yourself if it tickled your interest. All right, we're now going to zoom in on Professor Mamokgethi Pakeng. Let me tell you about her illustrious career thus far. And she matches this CV, let me tell you. Okay, she's the first black woman to get a PhD in mathematics in South Africa. And in 2000...
Mathematics education.
It's how to educate people in mathematics. I want to talk to you more about that. In 2011, the NSTF, that's the National Science and Technology... What does the F stand for again?
Forum.
Awarded her for being the most outstanding senior female researcher over the last 5 to 10 years in recognition of her innovative quality research on teaching and learning mathematics in multilingual classrooms. So that's a little bit more about that. And in August 2014, CEO Magazine named her as the most influential woman in academia in Africa. She's also the founder of Adopt a Learner Foundation. So a strong community sense there. So before you... tell us a little bit more about this and other things. Your job at UCT, what exactly does it entail? Internationalization comes in there and research. What exactly does your position hold?
Okay. Firstly, let me say it's a new position. I only started on the 1st of July after finishing a 5-year term as DVC research at UNISA. So I moved in the same position in a different university. And I'm providing strategic leadership for research and postgraduate studies at UCT, crafting the strategy, the direction of the university in that regard, and making sure that it remains at the top in the rankings and so on. And internationalization is also about internationalizing the enterprise, that the enterprise is not just looking inward, but it also looks outward. So, and I know that at the moment there are debates about decolonization and what that means, and this is not anti that. It says we as South Africans can respond to local questions in a rigorous manner, to an extent that the external in a way that gives us international standing outside the country, all over the world.
Okay.
And so it's internationalizing the enterprise is not only about what we do, it's how we do it and who does it with us. So about the collaborations we have, the giving our students international experience before they complete their postgraduate studies at UCT. So it's that broadly, it's strategy around all of those issues, research, internationalization.
All right. Where did it all start for you? Where did it start, the love of, I guess, mathematics and education in that regard? Also, your love of community involvement, that seems to come through very strongly.
I mean, I think it's easy, and probably it will get your attention if I say it started under a tree at grade one. I did my grade one under a tree in a school in Mpumalanga called Ikageleng in 1972.
Where exactly is it in Mpumalanga?
How much time do you have? I can give an interesting description, or I can just tell you the direction of where it is.
No, I'm just thinking Mpumalanga is such a beautiful province.
Yeah, but it's not really the beautiful part of Mpumalanga, actually. It's at the border, on the border of Mpumalanga and Northwest.
Okay.
So actually it's the part that used to be Botswana during apartheid.
All right.
So it's not the Ndebele part, you know, it's the Setswana part. Of Mpumalanga, really on the edges. And if you had the time, I would have given you the direction that makes you realize that as you drive there, you actually feel like you're getting to the end of the world.
Yeah,
and there, the village pops up. Do you know what I mean? Like that's.
And there's a tree there.
So
and
exactly.
Under, that tree,
under a tree, and it's beyond Hammanskraal, Rustifenter, Pinar Srifir that way. You keep driving and driving and driving. So it's that's that part where I spend my early life at, because my parents, even though they were in Pretoria, in a township in Garankuwa, you know, my mother had gone back to completing high school so that she can go to study teaching at university. And that was after having all three of us children. Mm. And I'm the second one. So my brother and I went there. So that's basically where it started.
All right. And you always loved
my
maths?
My love for mathematics, I wasn't aware of it. I mean, I'd say at five I had a good teacher. I mean, it's amazing what role teachers play. Mm. I had an interesting teacher in Senate 5, which is grade 7 now. And the teacher always had, he was the principal of the school, but he had this idea that I'm smart and I should perform better than his daughter, who wasn't at our school, was at another school. And if his daughter got 90%, I've got to beat that or get that. And if I didn't, I got punished.
It was a reflection on his teaching, so it was an ego thing.
Yeah, well, but he didn't do that with many other kids. I mean,
he saw something.
There were some in the class that he treated that way, and he would punish if you didn't get that. And so there was something, but at that time there was no love. There was a compliance that was driving me to do maths more than other places.
Okay.
But the love came when I was doing grade 10. At grade 10, there was a winter school. I was in Garankuwa at that time because we did go back when my mother started teaching. And I was the school that I was going to, during the winter holidays, my school didn't have a winter school for maths. They had a winter school for science. And my parents decided me to go to take me to a winter school in math that was doing mathematics. Mm. And this is interesting because there was never a time when my parents hierarchized subjects. They never told us the importance of maths. There was nothing like that. In fact, I had no clue. My brother hadn't done maths until we all were graduates at home. So it was interesting that they said I should go to this winter school that was teaching maths. And at that winter school, they focused on, they introduced us to geometry. At my school, they hadn't. And it was, the teacher was so good. But it wasn't only the teacher. There were also the girls. The girl whose dad was my math teacher at Standard 5, that girl they made me compete with was there.
Okay.
And that's when I met her for the first time and we became friends. She was very bright. And there were others. So I ended up in this group of girls who were incredibly smart and a brilliant teacher, and who introduced something in an amazing way, and I got hooked to maths. I loved maths at that time. But I loved it because he made it make sense.
Yeah.
And so I went back to my school, geometry made sense. And sort of it affected the whole of maths, because then I could see the sense in it. Mm. And it drove everything that I do. And then because it made sense and I liked it, I ended up spending more time in maths than anything else. So I could fail everything except the maths.
Mm.
And so my maths was pretty good. I moved from being 60% to being 70%, 80%, and feeling very confident with the maths until I got to matric. And, you know, It's an interesting thing, because it wasn't because I thought the maths was important. It was simply because I got to a place of comfort, and I wasn't the smartest person, young person in class, and you know, I was naughty and everything like everyone. But yeah, so the bug bit at that time.
The difference a good teacher makes.
It is. But also the circle of young people you're with.
All right, then you went to varsity and you studied what exactly?
I studied interesting. I started with a BSc. BSc in education, and I was doing maths and biology and chemistry as the three subjects and other things. And in the first year, I failed biology and chemistry, and I got 70 a distinction for maths. And the university, the Faculty of Science didn't like that. And so I was called to the department and whatever. So the first semester, second semester, you know, my biology and chemistry went down again. And so the faculty wanted to say to me, the university said, no, maybe you should go for whatever I said, but I want my maths. So I said to them, can I do maths as my major and still do a BA? And they said, yeah.
Mm.
Because my maths marks were ridiculously high, and my other marks were, I mean, I was failed. It wasn't like a zero. They were like 40s. I didn't qualify for a sub, but I had failed. And so I decided to do a BA. I still completed in record time. It was a 4-year degree at University of Uputatswana.
Mm.
Every degree in that university had at that time, it was a BSc education or a BA education or a BCom. I think BCom was clean and law and whatever, but everyone had to do that. So education was a compulsory major. And then I decided to do Setswana, which is my language. I thought the other things are accompaniments. The thing that I'm here for is maths. Mm. I just want to get the maths. The rest of the thing I didn't care about. So actually, if you look at my transcript, my university transcript, it's a fascinating thing because my transcript, first year I failed biology and chemistry. Second year, I buckle up my Setswana because I want to finish in record time. Mm. I do psychology, development studies was compulsory. I managed to do everything, but I'm passing everything else with 50, 60%. And with maths, I move between 80, 70 at university. I would get out of an exam class in my maths and tear up the exam paper because I would say I've passed. I could never do that with anything else.
So it's interesting, that fascination with maths, it stood out.
But the important thing is I never thought mathematics was important. There was never a time that I thought I was special, because maybe that would have split to everything. The thing is, because I thought this is the easy thing, I spent more time on it. That's the thing. I spent more time on it. I practiced it more. I enjoyed it. It made sense. When I'm in the exam paper, I would write, and then I would check my answers, and then I would know this. I know that I've got more than 60%, and I would get out. You know, and it's a fascinating. I passed it even more than Setswana, which is my mother tongue at university.
All right, and your career went on very strong in academics, and I'm interested in a mathematician, if I can call you that, view on leadership.
Mm-hmm.
How do you view leadership? You're an academic,
yeah,
but a specific academic.
Mm-hmm.
And you're very interested in community.
Mm-hmm.
What was that organization that you started for? Adopt a Learner. Okay. What's your view of leadership?
For me, leadership is about service. It's about serving others. It's about making your context a better place, or your country. I'm saying your context because it could be any context.
Mm.
A better place to be in. And I always say what drives me to positions of leadership. I'm interested in changing the world, making it a better place. And I always say, but how do I do that? And so I always say, well, I start with myself, and then I go to the next place next to me, and the next one. So my family, and then it grows in that way. And so the way I started Adopt a Learner, it wasn't a thing about this is what leadership does. No, it was when I got my doctorate in 2002, 2003, I got a national award for, the best young researcher, blah, blah. And then that's when I discovered that I was the first black South African woman to get that doctorate. And then I thought, my God, what a responsibility.
Mm.
I thought 10 years down the line, people are going to look back. What have I done? And I thought, how would I feel 10 years down the line if I look back and I'm still the only one? And then I thought, I don't want to be the last.
Now, that to me is a trick, if I can call it that for a moment, that you used to understand the sanctity of your position, of what you symbolized. We spoke about it in the first half hour.
Yeah.
That you somehow looked ahead.
Yeah.
And then you looked back from 10 years hence. And that helped you understand, oh gosh, this is an important position.
It's a responsibility.
It's a responsibility. Mm. How do I respect it?
Yes. Mm. Yeah. And that's how I looked at it. How do I make good of this?
Mm.
Because it's nice to be celebrated, but you've got to make good of that. And it wasn't an office, but it was a position. You're the first blah, blah. It's a position of responsibility. And so I thought, I don't want to be the last. And if I don't want to be the last, then I should look at, how did I get here? I got lucky, I thought. When I was at high school, there were no people who were professors, who had doctorates. How about I make the situation of girls, young people like me, who grew up where I grew up, and they don't have the opportunity to meet people like me, and then I become their sister, their brother, their whatever, who shows them this is where you can be, and who supports them financially and otherwise and educationally to get there.
Mm.
So that's why I went to the school where I did grade 8 and 9, and I started it there. I started it with young people at that, and I thought this is a school where children who go to a township school like that today, children who go to a township school, it's because parents can afford to take them to a former Model C school or a private school. If parents can afford, they do that. If they can deny themselves dinner to do that for their children, they will do that. Mm. The ones who remain at the township is because parents don't even have a dinner they can deny themselves to pay for the school. And so I started at that school just so to provide a financial and educational support to students to get to where I am, just to make sure that I'm not the last.
Okay. Just to make sure I'm not the last. Frick and Louis, very quick comments on her view on leadership, context, to make my context better, to make the world, first starting with me, and then going a little bit broader, circling it out. And that attitude, I guess, defines you as a leader. Frick?
It's actually great to hear the almost theory of the first half and hear the practice in the second half.
Mm.
It's fascinating to see the behavior. I'm not doing this to become a leader. I am a leader, therefore I'm doing this. But it's a reciprocating process that happens here in this environment. And then for me, fantastic, that kind of ethical moment where ethics is described as being of service to others, that ethical moment that kicks in when the responsibility of being the first black woman. So this can't be an end in itself. It must be a means towards an end. What is that end? And that is to empower others and then push it over to others. That's fantastic.
Yeah, you're right. A lot of practice here in the theory we discussed, Louis.
Yeah.
Not many people started under a tree and they stayed there. I think this symbolizes, though, what can be done. You can't start in a more lowly manner than under this tree in grade one. I think it's inspirational. And we've seen this pattern unfold of people. So really a great deal, it does depend on you and the environment around you, yes. But you can't take away the need for a person to be a fighter, really. You can't take away that.
Very quickly, Mamakhedi, how are we doing as a society with regards to this leadership you talk about? So that's your, shall we say, definition of leadership. And collectively as a society, how are we doing?
Wow, this is a bad time to ask that question. Because I think... we're not doing too well. And I'm just looking at the positions, the people who are in positions of leadership. And sometimes I wonder, is it because our media has become much more robust at revealing what's happening, that maybe it was happening before that we didn't know?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it really happening?
How much? Or was it in the middle
yes,
somewhere? Yeah.
Yes, yes. And that scares me. You know. So, and sometimes I want to convince myself, no, it was all happening is because it was all under wraps. But maybe there's a bit of both. I think we're not doing very well. I think, and sometimes I wonder, is it because of the inequalities that exist in our society that people want the leadership position even if they know nothing about the work?
That hunger for it, you know?
No, it's not hunger for the... It's just they want something to eat.
Mm.
So they will go, they will fight for that position because they want what comes with the position, whether it's power, money, whatever, that makes people want. Because I cannot understand how sometimes, not even in politics, just in business, in educational institutions, how people, some people who are not yet ready for a particular job or position, and will fight to have that. Okay? And I'm thinking, I've had so many people offering me to be vice chancellor of a university. I've been in the executive position for a long time. And I've always said to people, I don't think I'm ready. I want to go there when I'm ready. And people don't understand. How do you move from one university to another in the same position? Oh, because I want to. Because I'm on a trajectory. And it's my journey. And I'm defining this journey. And I think there aren't many people who do that. Because in fact, doing the journey yourself and making these kinds of decisions and waiting sometimes means that you let go of the goodies. And the goodies could be a better salary, perks, power, respect, more people following, and so on. Some people are driven by those things. They want those things, the sooner the better.
At all costs, you know.
At all costs. Mm. Whether I understand the job or not, it doesn't matter. Whether I've proven myself as an expert, because for me that's also another part of the leadership. If you are going to be a leader in an academic enterprise, for example, how much of an academic have you proven yourself? And I've made that my business. I want to be a proven academic. So I pursuing the rating system was always my... I want to be rated. I want to get a good rating. When I become an executive, people must believe me. It's important when you're in a leadership position that you are believable, that people can follow you, even if they are not sure whether that city on the hill that you're taking them to really exists or is as good as you say.
But they trust you.
But they trust you. Mm. But people cannot trust you if you haven't proven yourself in the enterprise. I that's my view. And so I have said, well, I want to be an excellent researcher. And people can believe me as an excellent researcher. And so I pursued that, and that's why I pursued the B rating. I got it whilst as a dean. I got my B rating as a researcher. And I thought that's... But I'm quite fascinated at how much in our country that's not an issue.
Mm.
That people want the position and you'll get what the position does when you're in it. I know that we get into positions, there's a whole lot of, things that we learn whilst we are in the position, but there's a whole lot that you need to have already to get into the position.
One can argue you're never really fully ready for the position, but but there are things that, at least you should have achieved. Yeah, our time is up, Professor Mamokgethi Phakeng. Great wise words right at the end. And maybe just Frick and Louis just end off with a quick thought on what she said, and then I'll share with you a Sibanye executive leadership thought as an ending. Frick, any comments?
My last thought is just in linking with our first part. This is inspiring to hear a leader in action with the concepts and the principles that we spoke about.
Yeah, Louis?
agree with that.
Okay. The Sibanye executive thought, we end with this. Michael Jordan, I don't even know if this is the athlete Michael Jordan, but he said, earn your leadership every day. And I think that comes back to the first half hour again, where how do I remain connected with the sanctity of the job? Well, if I go out every morning saying I have to earn my leadership every single day, then I think that one would be in good shape. And then my final comment, because I've just come 5 days from the bush, going to the rock, you know, I really want to urge leaders, go to nature as often as you can. Go sit on that rock, under that tree, overlook the bush. Just connect with simplicity, with universality. Get back to who am I really, what really matters. And that's our message today. Thank you for joining us, and especially the two of you, thank you to academics and business and, I don't know, just wonderful having you in the studio. All right, next up, our business masterclass with Dr. Sean Cunningham. He represents USB Ed, and it's going to be about the big picture of technology. Richard Angus is going to lead the conversation, and then the second half of the business masterclass, we talk to an interesting SME. Stay with us. CliffCentral.com.